Time to bring in our buddy Bill Shanks. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. I want to make sure I got this right. 93.1 FM in Macon and 98.3 in...
Yeah. Calling it South Central Georgia. I've got a new term, South Central Georgia,
okay.
So are you saying that you can't go out at night in South Central Georgia? Oh, that's South Central LA, my bad.
I don't care what you're doing. Just listen to me.
I think that's happening. I just want to make sure I got it right because I think you were in the midst of all this stuff. So congrats for getting that move.
We turned it on yesterday, and I had a real radio experience. You guys will appreciate this. So last Saturday, I said, "All right, I'm going to drive this area to see to grade the signal and the sound of this frequency," and I took off. And I was in Macon. I heard it in Macon on I-475. Went to, in order, Lizella, Roberta, Reynolds, Butler, Americus, Cordial, Hawkinsville, Eastman, Cochran, back to Warner Robins, then to Fort Valley, and then to Macon. 6 hours in the radio. I'm a loser. I wanted to tell you that right now.
How about that, man? Plus, you just rattled off some great towns in Georgia, too.
Well, they can all hear us except for Americus. In downtown Americus, we're a little sketchy, so the president won't be able to hear us. That's a shame. But other than that, when you leave Americus and head to Lake Blackshear, east of Americus, you got us at a 10, but we got a little hole or something in Americus. So other than that, we're in all those towns. And even I had come through Fitzgerald before, and it was like a 7. So I've got people all over middle Georgia now rating this radio station on a scale of 1 to 10. People on Facebook are giving me numbers about how good it sounds. So anyway, it's been
good.
It's been a good experience.
Hopefully that rocket ship in Cordial strengthens your signal a little bit.
Oh, man, I used to love that when I'd go from Waycross to Atlanta. I wanted to stop that crystal, the rocket ship at Cordial. Awesome.
Oh, man. Hey, the Braves, I thought they did pretty well, all things considered, here over the last 2 weeks.
Very much. I think they did very well, very much so pleased with what they did. And they didn't give up any significant piece. This is what a deep farm system will do for you. All right, the Encarnacion third baseman, he is blocked by Austin Riley and Johan Camargo. The Bruce Zimmerman kid, it was in AA, a fifth-round pick in the 2017 draft, did very well. Saw-tossing lefty, didn't throw very hard, had a great year in Rome, got bumped up all the way to AA. He's not in the top 10 of the Braves pitching prospects. And then you've got Evan Phillips, who is a reliever, kind of interchangeable reliever. He'll pitch in the big leagues. And, you know, so, you know, they have that. And then, I mean, to be able to swing that deal and to get a pitcher who they think can kind of turn it around and get over that hump, I kind of equate Kevin Gausman to what Sean Newcomb and Mike Fultonevich were before this season, kind of waiting to get over that hump. And now they'll be able to work with him, plus a reliever for next year. And they didn't give up anything in the Reds trade for Duvall. That was – I can't believe they were able to do what they did with that. So, yeah, it was
a really good deal. What had happened to Lucas Sims? Sam and I were talking about him. He had just kind of fallen down the pecking order, hadn't he?
Yeah, and that's what I think – is the danger of a deep farm system, Dave. You know, when you've got kids that are talented that are better than you, you've got to perform or else you're going to get passed. And that's what happened to Lucas. He would get his chance in Atlanta, never did well, never could show anything consistently, and would go back to AAA and be really good. And then he would not be very good. He would struggle, and then they'd call him back in Atlanta, and then he'd struggle, and then he'd go back to AAA and pitch 6 scoreless innings. So, you know, I think it's good for him to be able to move on. But as far as what the Braves gave up with that, that's nothing. I mean, he and Whistler had their chance. They had a high ERA. They didn't perform well. They need to go somewhere else. And for them to be able to trade those two and the fourth outfielder for someone who I think could be a better fourth outfielder or even get some starts for them was a pretty good move.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
Bill, Chris Archer ends up getting dealt to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and when we had talked to you about him a few weeks ago, you said you didn't want the Braves to go that route. it's interesting because that's a guy with team control and stuff like that, but at the same time, you know, Pittsburgh gave up what they gave up. What do you think the Braves, you know, would have had to have given up? And I'm assuming the answer to this is the price would have been too steep.
Tiki Toussaint, Austin Riley, and another third prospect,
or something of that nature.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, Glasnow, he'd been moved to the bullpen, but, I mean, he was a very heralded prospect when he came up. And Meadows, you know, he's from the Atlanta area. He's been a very heralded prospect for a while. The Braves have tried to get him in the past. And then there's supposedly a third significant piece that's supposed to be named later. I don't know if it may be someone from the draft this year, but it would have been very expensive. And I just don't think – you know what these trades and the fact that he did not – Alex Anthopoulos did not include a major prospect tells me, and I think tells all of us, is that what we've been feeling and believing about this farm system, of the talent level of these prospects, he agrees with it. He's had 4 months of the season and spring training to look at Tuki Toussaint and Ian Anderson. By the way, Ian Anderson, the 2016 first-round draft pick, third pick overall in the draft last night, pitched 7.2 hitless innings. He's not going to trade those guys unless it's for some major. It's like, all right, you trade something for Chris Archer, you trade something significant for even Kevin Gausman, or if you're going to blow it out, if you're going to trade Tiki Toussaint and Ian Anderson and Colby Allard and another fourth prospect, trade them for Jacob DeGrom. Trade them for someone who is going to blow us away and be the lead person in that rotation. We're not sitting around wondering, well, is he going to be better than Folty or Newcomb? Yeah, no, he's going to be better than Folty or Newcomb. If you're going to do it for that kind of pitcher, not Chris Archer, who is still good, but he's not what people thought he was going to be a couple of years ago. Maybe he'll be that way again in Pittsburgh, but his value's dropped. So I think it tells us that he's seen these prospects for 4 months. He realizes there's a special group here that he's got to maximize the value on with elite players, not just pretty good players.
Well, I guess at what point will that happen during the offseason that we'll see a heralded prospect like a Tuki Toussaint? I'm not saying him specifically, but is that kind of trade going to happen during the offseason?
At some point, David, I don't know how it can't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's this winter. I don't know whether it's spring training or next July. The backlog is getting ready to really clog up here. And I mean, Kyle Wright just got promoted to AAA. He pitches today. They got rained out last night. He pitches today as part of a doubleheader. Bryce Wilson, who was the fourth-round pick in the 16 draft with Ian Anderson and Joey Wentz and Kyle Muller. All four of those guys are doing well. Bryce Wilson's already up to AAA. He's pitching in the other game of the doubleheader today. Toussaint has taken off. I wouldn't be surprised to see Toussaint here soon in the Atlanta bullpen. So the clog is starting to happen. They knew a year ago, Coppolella knew a year ago, that at some point, even if he did make a big trade, that it was still going to be where it was going to be a log jam, where these pitchers, if best case scenario, they all did well, and most of them didn't get hurt or were healthy, they were going to have a log jam where they would have to do something at some point. And so I think it's going to be hard for him not to do something significant. I'm not saying four pitchers that are going to have to be traded. But, you know, could he trade two of these special ones this winter for something that's really, I mean, an elite player? Yeah, I think he might have to at some point in the next, at least in the next 12 months.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
Bill, one of the players that didn't get traded on deadline day but could still pass waivers and get traded later on, Adrian Beltre, would you be interested in the Braves making a run at him?
Well, they did make a run at him. I don't know if he said no or what, but I think they talked to Texas and they discussed him. I think it's all his decision of whether or not he wants to go to Atlanta or Boston or anywhere else. I don't think it would cost very much, so I think this may be more on him. But to be honest with you, I think Camargo's doing fine where I wouldn't upset that apple cart. I know they'd have great – I'm not going to be against it if it were to happen, because he's a great player and a great leader and it would be great clubhouse presence for that team. But Camargo's on pace for 20-something home runs and 80-something RBI, and I think he missed the first month of the season. So Do they need him? I don't think so. And there's still the possibility of Austin Riley being in the picture at some point this year. And, you know, the looming shortstop question of Camargo versus Swanson's on the horizon. So I don't think they need him. I think it'd be a luxury if they got him. But at this point, since he didn't get traded before the deadline on Tuesday, it seems like he wants to stay put, because I think he said he wants to play one more year in Texas.
I know Newcomb threw 134 pitches in the near no-no on Sunday. Is that why he's not pitching this weekend, or is he trying to get? Are they trying to give him a little fresh air from what happened after the game?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with what happened after the game, David. I think it's just that they obviously have a rainout. They have another day off on Monday, and they're able to space these pitchers out a little bit more, where they can let him go on Tuesday and just make sure he's okay for after pitching 134 pitches, which I think was the most any pitcher in the major leagues has thrown this year. And so he's going to just get a couple extra days. He'll be pitching on, I guess, 8 days rest or whatever. So we'll see how he does. But it was a great performance, and they're just making sure he's got a little time to rest after the heavy workload, as today's standards are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too. Afterwards, all the stuff came out. Thought he handled it very well. The Braves PR staff did a great job of getting out in front of that one, too, and certainly not condoning what he did as an 18- or a 19-year-old 6-7 years ago, whenever it was. But, and I know y'all have talked about it on your show, because Sam and I, in fact, this is the first show that Sam and I have had together this week, because Sam's been out. But we were saying, you know, first of all, this guy that put these tweets out, Nats Squid, so it's a Washington Nationals person. It was like, at what point, or Washington Nationals fan, at what point are you a social media crusader, and then at what point are you just a troll? In other words, if you have this stuff and you're going to throw it out there, you're not waiting until after the guy throws almost a no-hitter and then you put it out there. I mean, that seems certainly low rent on his part. But what were you guys talking about with Newcomb in that part of the near no-no?
Well, I think it was awful of what he wrote, but I think it was even worse of what happened for someone to go dig it up and try to embarrass him after he had the best pitching performance of his life. Kids do stupid things. We all know that. People may say, well, that's an excuse. Well, it's the truth. And I've interviewed this kid, and he's been a real nice young man. And, you know, look, I think for people to go and do that is awful. And social media, I hope it's not the ruination of this country, but sometimes I wonder if it is. And it is awful that someone would go and dig that up and wait until that moment to ruin that boy's life, and that day, rather, not life, but that day, because of how special it was, and to make something that it was just unnecessary. And then Trey Turner had to go through it, and Sonny Gray, I think, faced something the other day. So it's just it's amazing. It makes you want to stay off social media to see things like that happen to people, but it's a lesson to people to make sure you know what you're typing before you go out there, because some dumb idiot who has nothing else better to do is going to retrieve it if he can use it against you. So it's unfortunate, but he handled it fine, and hopefully it's moved on and it doesn't seem like it's been an issue with the team whatsoever.
But it's how Atlanta is it? One strike away and can't get that.
No.
I know. It's incredible. And it just
you know what, David? I tell you, I was watching that game, and of course, I didn't want to move. I didn't want to look at my phone because I knew some idiot was going to say, he's hit three, sold a no-hitter. But I was just so into it. And when that ball went in the left field, I thought I was going to cry. I'm like, oh, my God. That was just your – you know, you had it for Folty last year, and you're just – your emotions are in their game, and you're like you're in his shoes, and you feel it. And it's like, oh, no. You know, it is. It's Atlanta. It's the – beaten fan syndrome is what one of my callers calls it, for where we're just always beaten down when we feel like we're going to have something very special, like a no-hitter or a Super Bowl win, and then, boom, it blows up. But it was still a tremendous performance. And I tell you, at the end of this year, regardless of what happens between now and October, aren't we going to look back and look at the progress of Mike Poltanovich and Sean Newcomb? And hopefully Kevin Gausman can be in that discussion, too, with what he'll do the final 2 months of the season, and really feel good about the development of two very good young pitchers in this rotation, which if I can take that away from this season, that'll be just about as good enough for me, because that's what's going to put this team on the upward trend for years to come.
Do you think this is gonna, like, this? What are your thoughts on, like, what might be a six-man rotation the rest of the way?
Well, I'm for it because I don't want Max Fried to lead the rotation. I really want to see what Max Fried can do with 10 starts for the rest of the year, or however many it would be. And it's like, who do you take out? You know, you've got – I know some people were saying, well, take Teron out. Well, let's be smart about this. Even though he's inconsistent and he's frustrating, I don't think they're going to take Teron out of the rotation. I think Sanchez obviously has to pitch well tomorrow night when he pitches again, because you don't want to give them a reason to make you think that he needs to go to the bullpen. Fulte, obviously, and Newcomb are going to be in there. Gausman's, that's three. But if it's me between Fried and Sanchez, I'm going to go with Fried because I want to see Fried pitch, and I want to see what he can do, and I want to see if we can give him 10 starts, if at the end of the year we'll know, is Max Fried one of these five starting pitchers? I think we need to know that. And so I don't know whether – I know the talk was on the team earlier in the year when Sanchez was first started to get going, but before his injury, that if he kept on doing well and they had to move him because someone was going to be knocking on the door, that he would go to the bullpen. But now that he's done so well, I mean, he's got the best ERA of any starter in the rotation, so that's kind of dangerous. And if he goes out tomorrow night and shuts down the Mets, which, I mean, I don't know if that's a big thing. I could probably shut out the Mets for at least three or four innings. I mean,
we say that they're going to win three out of four this weekend, the Mets are.
Beating fan syndrome, here we go again.
Right? yep.
No.
Hey, well, ask the Braves when they played the Reds and the Orioles in those six games.
I know. Well, I think the Mets have given up, because that 25-4, whatever that score was the other day, I actually texted a friend of mine who unfortunately is a Mets fan, and I said, dude, what the heck? And he said, they've given up. They've totally given up. And I'm like, well, I hope they'll give up every day this weekend when the Braves come to town, you know. But they'll play their hardest when Atlanta comes in. But, you know, if Sanchez does well, he's probably in there. And maybe they do go with a six-man. You know, they got two doubleheaders coming up the next 2 weeks, David.
And yeah.
That's something that I think will enter into the equation. Plus, they've got a lot of games in a short period of time. So they may have to go with a six-man rotation, which would be good to keep Max Fried in there.
Bill, if you look at the Braves going into next season, you know, there's five spots in a starting rotation normally. I know some we've seen some use six. But, you know, just in terms of some guys, and I'm probably leaving someone out here, I've got Colby Allen, Max Fried, Tugi Toussaint, Mike Soroka, Kyle Wright, Mike Foltynewicz, Julio Teheran, Sean Newcomb. I mean, there is going to be a massive competition in spring training for those five spots.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. And if I had to pick my five that I would want, me, not the team, just who I would prefer to see, I would go Fulte, Newcomb, Fried, Soroka, and Kyle Wright. And that's a young rotation. And that means Teron's gone, and that means you have to figure out what to do with the rest of them. We forgot about Gohara. He's, you know, in the equation too. And that's where you have to see a big trade's got to come. But that's why, Sam, I think, let's see Fried start to see if we feel going into the offseason, all right, Max Fried's one we don't want to let go of. I mean, I was told the other day before the Gausman trade, I asked the question, is Fried sticking in the rotation the rest of the year? And the answer was yes, he's in there. And so that's why I'm really interested to see if he can get these starts in August and September to give us more of an indication of what we got. I think they know what they got with Soroka. No, there's no mystery with that. Even though he's hurt, they've got to make sure he's healthy, obviously. But they know he's really, really good. And he's going to be 21 next year, and he's still got the stuff, and he's just got to be healthy because he's never been hurt before. So how is he going to bounce back from that? So that's a big question. But what do you do with Tukey? What do you do with Gohara? What do you do? Bryce Wilson, like I said, going up to AAA now. You've got Ian Anderson in high A. He may go to AA here soon. He's an excellent prospect. After last night, he'll probably fly up the prospect charts even more. Joey Wentz, Kyle Muller. I mean, no, the logjam's here. And that's why That's why the evaluation process, I'm telling you, I think I've said it on the show, and I'll say it again. If I'm Alex Anthopoulos, I'm getting everybody together in, after the Braves are done, whenever it is, October, November, whenever the heck it's done. And I'm on, I want every coach in the minor leagues. I want every major league coach. I want scouts. I mean, I want 50 people in that room. And we're going to spend 3 days. We're going to go over all of these pitchers, and I want opinions from every single body about what they think about these pitchers, because the evaluation of these guys they've got now is going to determine what they need moving forward. And it's like, it's not easy. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough decisions. You're probably going to give away a pitcher who may go somewhere else to get good. But if that's the case, you've got to know what you have before you do that and know what you can get back. And it's a great situation to be in. I mean, look, 30 years ago when the Braves were rebuilding, they had a ton of pitchers. And they had some Kevin Kaufman, Gary Eve, Pete Smith. I mean, they had Tommy Green. They had a lot of guys who were there that didn't make it, or Kevin Blankenship comes to mind. I mean, there were a lot of guys, but I'm not saying this group right now has Hall of Famers, potential Hall of Famers, but quantity-wise, this 1988 doesn't even compare to what's going on right now. It's ridiculous with the quantity, and hopefully the quality is just as good as well.
Bill, yes or no, Julio Teheran is one of the five in the rotation next year?
I think Gausman's addition means no. I think they're, you know, he's going to have one more year plus an option year on that contract, Sam, and I think they're just going to say it's just time to kind of move on. And, again, I've said this to you in particular, where I think we're going to appreciate Julio more after he's gone for what he did do during a rebuild. But I just think that I don't know how you fit him in. And, I mean, heck, I just gave you five pitchers, and neither Gausman nor Teheran are in there. So how are you going to fit Teheran in there? And I don't see how. I think they're going to trade him, and they'll get something for him. And I hope he has some value. He's got an affordable, I think it's $11 million next year, plus an option with a $1 million buyout for 2020. So it's a very affordable contract for someone who needs a third or fourth starter. And I think there'll be a market for him. I just don't know what they can get back. But I he's not my rotation. Of course, neither is Gausman. They acquired him 48 hours ago, so I don't know what's going
to
happen.
No, I'd like to think I played a small part in Julio's best start of the season.
Well, you ran him out of town. I want to say that Sam Franco railroaded him out of town, believe me. You were the anti-Teheran, big time.
Hey, he had his best start of the year when I was working that game, so that's all I can
I know.
Say, Bill. That's all I can say.
I know, which meant you should have gone down there and apologized to him and bowed in prayer.
Here's the weird thing. He's had a lot of good starts this year. He's also had a lot of just horrible. It's not, you know, that's the thing. It's the inconsistency.
That Marlins start was crap.
But, I mean, that's the thing. It's just, that's just what's so frustrating is that you see the good stuff and you see the bad stuff. Wait, by the way, what did you think of Allard the other night? I hadn't seen him pitch. Was his is his velocity always going to be like 90 or 91? Or was that just because of the weather and the, you know, is that what he is? He's that. A guy that locates and he's not Gahara type lefty, but more of a Glavin type lefty.
Yeah, he really is. And he didn't use his curveball very much.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that was because of the rain or not. His curveball is really good. Max Fried good. It's really good.
So I assume that was a weather issue.
Yeah, because, and this may be stupid, but I wondered if because of the weather, if he was more prone to a blister or something with a wet ball, if he was throwing the curveball a lot. So I didn't know. Who knows? That may be stupid, but he didn't throw his curveball very much at all. He tried to locate, and you know, he is what he is. Colby's a good prospect. I think others are better, and unfortunately that's the situation. It's like Colby, if this is a normal farm system, Colby out would still be a really good prospect, but not here. I mean, it's just you go see Kyle Wright's numbers in the last month or in the month and a half have been excellent. And then you see what Ian Anderson did last night. I talked to a scout last night who didn't see the game, but he talked about how Ian Anderson was just taking off. And I'm like, where's he going to pitch?
Yeah.
He said, I don't know. I don't need, I mean, it's like, I don't know, but that's why, who is special? You know, who in this group, Tuki Toussaint has taken off. he's gone from a good prospect that everybody thought would take off to someone who has taken off. All right, so if that's the case, you've really got to grade him on what his potential is. Is he now showing us what he is, where his walks are down, his strikeouts are up, his hits innings pitch ratio is great, and he's just blowing people away? And if that's the case, well, how the heck can you trade somebody like him? You know, and I'm telling you, if somebody's going to get traded, it's going to be really, really good. I don't know how, because it's just simple math. It's just math of what they are. You got five pitchers, and even if you keep two of them, you may have three more to trade.
Bill, always great talking to you these Thursdays. We love it. And we didn't get around any football today, but we'll definitely do that next week.
Oh, the Falcons.
Hush your mouth, boy. You know what I said yesterday on the show? I said this is the first time on August 1st on my show, I think, in 12 years that I have not talked football because of the fact that the trades and everybody wanted to talk about the Braves. We had a ton of calls wanting to talk about the Braves yesterday. And it's like that tells you how we got through the summer because of the Braves, thank goodness, but it's here. And when they get to practice tomorrow and we start seeing more reports and hearing from our boys that are also on your show about what's going on, we'll get in the mode for sure real quick because it's here.
It is for sure. Thanks, Bill. We'll catch you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Bill Shanks.